Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is Fine-Tuning Epic Beaker to Optimize Orders and Streamline Communication Between Clinical Teams and Lab to Reduce Pre-Analytical Errors. The presenters are Ryan Mottos, Beaker and Reporting Expert, Honeydew Consulting, South Burlington, Vermont, and Kaylee Smith, MIM, MLS, Technical Specialist 2, Microbiology, Advocate Clinical Laboratories, Advocate Health, Charlotte, North Carolina.
Well, good morning, and welcome to our next session. I would like to first start by asking you, do you all have the Whova app? Okay, awesome. I love this app. I guess I'm a techie at heart. On the app, you can provide session feedback after the session, as well as questions and answers. Okay, so without delay, I wanted to introduce our speakers for today. Ryan Mottos, who is the Beaker and Reporting Expert with Honeydew Consulting, and Kaylee Smith. And I had the pleasure of working with Kaylee, so I'm really excited about Kaylee's presentation as well, who is a technical specialist too in microbiology at Advocate Clinical Laboratories at Advocate Health, based in Charlotte. So without delay, welcome.
Hi, good morning, everyone. So for our session today, we'll be discussing three projects that we undertook with Atrium to reduce pre-analytical errors. So a couple of these were IT-driven, but with the goal of improved outcomes, but we collaborated with our operations counterparts to put all of these in place. So the three projects are an improved way to set default blood collectors, whether unit collect, i.e. nursing, or phlebotomy, lab collect. We introduced push notifications to nursing for cancels, redraws, and declined add-ons. And we underwent an optimization for specimen type and source. So we are going to, since I'm an IT consultant, we are going to delve into the weeds today and talk about some of the details of how to implement this at your sites. So just a quick intro. I'm Ryan Mottos. I work for Honeydew Consulting. I'm a Beaker and Reporting Expert. I did work at Epic for 2 years, from 2011 to 2013, before moving into consulting. So my main interests are improving healthcare systems reporting to improve healthcare delivery and working with operational champions to improve lab workflows. Honeydew, we are a small boutique consulting firm specializing in Beaker and data innovations. With 30 staff around the US, we had 11 staff working with Atrium for 2 years across 4 implementations, and I stayed on for a 5th implementation with Wake Forest Baptist. You can learn more about us online.
And good morning, my name is Kaylee Smith. I'm a technical specialist for microbiology and Advocate Clinical Labs in their Southeast region in the Charlotte market. I've been a clinical microbiologist for over 9 years, and I have 6 years of leadership and project management experience during that time. A lot of my focus right now is on workflow optimizations to improve lab quality and also leveraging available tools to increase patient safety and our testing accuracy. A little bit about Advocate Health for our size and scope. Advocate Health now comprises 4 different organizations, including Advocate Healthcare and Aurora Healthcare up in the Midwest, Atrium Health in the Southeast, and Wake Forest School of Medicine. We are the 3rd largest non-for-profit in the nation now, scoping 6 different states, including Alabama, Georgia, Illinois, North and South Carolina, and Wisconsin. Advocate Clinical Labs is the enterprise laboratory that operates the enterprise laboratory for Advocate Health, and it's the largest non-for-profit serving an IDN in the nation. We do have multiple labs across all of our different 6 states, but we're going to focus really in on the Southeast region during this talk, known as Atrium Health. So we'll be focusing in our labs that service Alabama, Georgia, North, and South Carolina. So a little bit of a project overview for us is, back in 2020, Atrium Health decided to move forward with switching our LIS and EMR systems to Epic. We began a lot of work, and due to the size and scope of our Southeast region, we went with a waved approach to go live. You can see that we've done those five waves, as Ryan was mentioning, from 2021 to 2024, starting with our partners in Georgia and ending with our partners in Wake Forest. Throughout this time, we worked through a lot of different implementations, and those are those dark blue boxes at the bottom of the timeline that you'll see. As we work through to talk about them, we'll work through where they fell in the timeline and why. But overall, we want to discuss, why did we focus so much on the pre-analytical phase? Why was this important for us when we were optimizing during this time? When you think of the life of a specimen, there are three phases of clinical testing: pre-analytical, analytical, and post-analytical. The pre-analytical phase takes up 60% of the specimen's lifespan. It includes things like test selection, patient identification, sample collection, transport to the lab, specimen receiving, and initial specimen processing. Because it takes so much of the sample's life, this is oftentimes where we can see the most errors. In fact, 46 to 68% of diagnostic testing errors are due to gaps in our pre-analytical phase. So we really wanted to focus in on this because it also tends to be the place where we have the most overlap with our clinical partners and the most kind of area where there might be tension or friction as we're working through these. By focusing on the pre-analytical phase and optimizing there, we're able to do a lot of good patient care initiative to improve our patient care, improve our lab results, and ease communications between both the laboratory and the clinical side patient-facing clinicians. So to start, we're going to dive in a little bit on setting default blood collectors.
So after our first round of go-lives, this is in July of 2021, we had a high volume of tickets related to unit collect versus lab collect issues. There was dissatisfaction from nursing in that, you know, units had orders sent inappropriately to phlebotomy or vice versa, sent inappropriately to nursing. So the issue, the risk with this was that all of the build to set that was in order transmittal, which is a rules engine that directs orders to, you know, the appropriate place. So that requires specialized build knowledge. We only had two analysts on the team who even were certified to make changes to that. And it was risky to update on the fly. You have to make changes in all three environments. There's no migration. So we saw an opportunity to improve how we set our default collectors by using some items directly on the department and taking order transmittal out of the equation. So just to refresh, this was after our wave one and before our first wave in the Charlotte area, so for 2021 go live in December. So the functionality works like this. So for every department that can collect blood specimens, they each have one of the following default settings. So a unit can be unit collect always or lab collect always, in which case you can never override that. This is for instance, for a unit like a CVOR that would never call phlebotomy in. The bulk of our units were bullets C and D, so unit collect by default, but respect the flow sheet, or lab collect by default, respect the flow sheet. So this allows nursing or lab to override, if needed for a particular patient, to switch whether the units go to nursing collect or lab collect. We also introduced a hybrid option for some of our smaller hospitals to send everything to both nursing and to lab. So for anyone in those, any patient in those respect flow sheet units, which again, this was the bulk of our departments, nurse or lab can update the lab collect blood collection flow sheet in the storyboard, which can be done in hyperspace or on Rover. So a little bit into the technical side. So we stole from the facility structure team one of their grouper items on the department record. And so those values that we just discussed are, we entered those in for each department that can collect blood. So it was a data gathering project to with our nursing managers to ensure that we had that set appropriately for each department. But the big advantage of this is it's just one item that can be changed very easily. You can do them in bulk via import. And so it's a standard part of our new implementations at Advocate to gather that information. So in order transmittal, we have a cascade that sets that order class, that unit or lab collect, based on that department setting. So the settings at the top of the cascade will be overridden by ones below if the criteria are met. So we start with our respect flow sheet departments at the top. And then any departments that, if we perhaps missed a department, we have our settings that, our departments that, any departments that didn't get a setting get unit collect. Then after that, we have our patient header overrides. So if a, you know, a patient has, you know, we need to send their orders to lab collect, this would override the unit collect setting above. And then we have our immune departments that send everything to both nursing and phlebotomy or our unit or lab collect always. So again, I know this is getting into the technical weeds, and we're happy to provide more information so that you can implement this. This did save us quite a bit of time with making changes after go live. So just a quick expanded version so you can see how those particular settings work. Essentially, if the rules are true, then we are setting the order class appropriately. We have a couple examples of our rules here. Essentially, we're just looking at, based on where the patient is, the department, that grouper value for that department, and using that to set unit and lab collect. And then we have an example of our rule for overriding via the storyboard. So the outcomes of this. Over our next four go-live waves, we had, I think, about 9 tickets for changing that value. And so that's an order of magnitude fewer than we had at our first go live. Changing that default for a department no longer requires any changing in order transmittal. So anybody on the Beaker team can go in to a department, change that value, and then migrate it up to production. We even have that, that item safe listed, so we don't have to take it to change control. So the amount of time to make a change for a department went down dramatically. We also introduced this send to nursing and phlebotomy, which was useful for some of our smaller hospitals. I think one of our hospitals in Wake Forest uses that, and one in Navescent. So this sends every order to both nursing and phlebotomy, so they can decide outside of Epic who is collecting. So I think some sites have, you know, complex rules of, you know, phlebotomy comes 9 to 4, Monday, Thursday, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and, you know, 9 to 8, Tuesday, Thursday, or something like that, so that those decisions of who's collecting can be made outside of the system. So that was a big satisfier as well. Next, I'll turn it over to Kaylee to talk about our push notifications.
Okay, so the next thing we worked through was push notifications for several different classes of actions taken by the lab. We started first in May of 2022 with push notifications for what's known as redraw, when a specimen is sent for redraw. So what was happening is there's a difference in the Epic versus what we were previously used to in our Sunquest Cerner side. In our previous side, when we had the multiple different EMRs working together, if we could receive a specimen from the floor that was, say, quantity insufficient or hemolyzed, we'd have to fully cancel that test and call the provider for a new collection order and a new collection. Epic gave us this new functionality that allowed us to leverage the same order, but just send for recollect. That's what redraw is. However, since it wasn't a cancellation, there wasn't a phone call to the floor to let them know that, hey, this needs to be recollected. So oftentimes, there wasn't a notification directly to nursing that this might be delayed, the phlebotomist is coming back, or oops, hey, can you please redraw on this patient, unless they were actively in the brain of Epic for that patient where they would see it. This was resulting in some recollection delays and a little bit of frustration and friction. So what we opted to do is we saw the opportunity to leverage some of our existing communication pathways that we built for closed loop criticals to alert for redraws using push notification to their mobile devices.
So since nurses were already used to receiving push notifications for criticals, we expanded the redraw functionality as well. So for any inpatient or ED nurses, LPNs, charge nurses, technicians, or paramedics actively on the patient's treatment team at the moment of redraw, we're sending an important Rover push notification for any unit collect redraws. These are distinguished with a yellow exclamation point and an urgent message, so action is needed from nursing for those. And we also opted to have an informational push notification for any lab collect redraws. This is just letting the nurse know, hey, results might be a little delayed because lab needs to come recollect this order. So a few screenshots of this. These are just the push notifications on the lock screen. You see the difference between the redraw needed from nursing versus the phlebotomist notification. We have FYI only in there. No yellow exclamation for the phlebotomy redraw. So this is just the details of the notification once the nurse authenticates. You can see what order needs to be recollected and any reason for redraw, as well as the order ID. That is customizable. We wanted to keep it simple. You also see at the bottom who else received the notification. And then in the, if a notification is dismissed or needs to be referred to later, here's how they appear in the Rover Notification Center. I'm going to show you next some of the configuration options. So this is done via order transmittal, and it's a very easy set of build. So I really encourage sites who don't have this, who are used to having, you know, who have nursing receive notifications already for other clinical areas. Epic has an extension that can be used in order transmittal that has a few configuration options. The extension configures the what and the who, whereas order transmittal configures the when. So within the extension, you can configure that priority, whether it's informational or important or even critical, the text that appears on the lock screen, the text that appears when the user's authenticated, the smart text body of the message, and then we have a few recipient parameters that we opted to use treatment team relationships. So these users, if they're actively on the team, the treatment team at the moment of redraw, that's when they receive the notification. But you could also take advantage of in-basket pools or groups if you want to do it a different way. So it's really simple build in order transmittal. We're essentially just saying, hey, look, if a unit collect order is redrawn, send the unit collect redraw push notification. And then for lab collect, send the lab collect one. I included the screenshot in the screenshot here, the same build for declined add-ons, which we will be getting to in a second. But yes, order transmittal configures the when, and again, this took probably about an hour to set up technically and was providing push notifications to nursing for all redraws.
So expanding our push notification system had a lot of really good outcomes, so we decided to continue to build on that. And as we had gotten through our first four waves, we had had the majority of the system on our instance of Epic. And we were starting to look towards bringing Wake Forest onto. We wanted to make sure that we had optimized this as we were getting fully aligned. So one of the next steps we decided to take was to look at cancellations and declined add-on requests. This one was a bit more complex when we were talking about what risk and problem were we seeing here. Communication wasn't always in real time. We were meeting the regulatory requirement that cancellation notifications went back to the ordering provider through the inbox right away. But as we know, providers often aren't inside of Epic unless they are actively working on a patient. Also, if you're in an acute care space and it's 7 p.m., we all know that shift change. That provider may not be back for several days. There was complexities there that meant that sometimes cancellations went unnoticed for longer periods of time. So communication wasn't really in real time and not really to the right audience. So there was no active notification to the active care team. What we decided to do is that this was a great chance for us to leverage our existing communication pathways through those push notifications so that we could maintain not having to continue doing calls, because sometimes, as we all know, calls take a lot of time on both sides of the line, but also getting active and pertinent information back to the teams when they needed it.
So we expanded our functionality to also to send those important push notifications for redraws or declined add-ons, since both of those need action from nursing. And then we sent those informational notifications for all cancels and for any lab collect redraws or declined add-ons. So again, this is automatic, happens in real time. A couple screenshots just showing those notifications that we added in this second phase. So our lab cancel notification and our declined add-on, that example is one that needs to be collected by nursing. just another image of our screen, of our screen once the user authenticates. You can see here in the bottom of this one that a user is notified if they're the only person who receives that notification. The order transmittal build for this was a little bit more complicated because we didn't want to send a notification for every type of canceled order. For instance, if a patient is discharged and a bunch of orders get automatically DC'd, or if we're auto-canceling a duplicate, we don't want to blow up people's phones with, you know, tons of push notifications for those. So we only wanted to send for select reasons. So we have our cancel reasons at Atrium limited by our lab profile, but within a rule, we listed out every type of cancel reason that should get a notification. Then in order transmittal, essentially if an order is canceled and that rule is true, we're sending the push notification, but if that rule is false, if we are getting, you know, a cancellation for a duplicate, we're not doing anything, we're not sending a notification.
So you can see the outcome of this is fairly drastic when we're talking about the volume of communications that are now handled by Epic for us. This is an average month for our entire Southeast region, not including Wake because they weren't quite live yet when we went rolled this data. However, you can see that in a month, about 10% of the notifications we sent have to do with cancellations and declined add-on requests to the care team. 30% are redraw informational to the nursing saying, hey, phlebotomy is coming back to redraw this. And 60% of those notifications are redraw by nursing of saying, hey, please redraw this specimen. That is nearly 10,000 patients who are positively impacted by these push notifications in a month, which is a huge win for us. It also really helped us with our communication with the care teams because they knew what was happening in real time. They could anticipate a delay because a redraw was needed by lab. They could anticipate a delay because they needed to redraw themselves. And they were often getting active feedback in the moment of, oh, it was quantity insufficient. I know I need to draw more this time to get this testing. You'll notice that our redraw rates are much higher than our cancel rates. This is because, as we all know as laboratorians, it's first and foremost our imperative to make sure we can get the testing out if we can. We try to cancel only if it's absolutely necessary. So we've really been leveraging that redraw function to get what we need so that the providers aren't having to go back in, place a new order, and then do a collection, because that does speed up the process quite a bit. This is still pretty young for us. We've had it about a little over 6 months now. And we are still working through some optimization opportunities. And the first has to do with some of the Epic functionality.
So I keep mentioning that users need to be actively on the treatment team at the moment of cancel, redraw, or declined add-on. So we have gotten some requests from nursing, hey, I never got a notification for this. What's up? And so that's almost always because a user was not actively on the team at the moment of cancellation. So one current barrier is no notification is sent if there isn't somebody actively on the team. That's just how the functionality works. So we are working to educate our clinical counterparts to make sure that they are setting themselves on the treatment team. It's a, you know, part of their shift, part of their workflow to ensure their, you know, correctly listed for each patient, but we're also working with Epic. We filed a QA note, so maybe that will be in the 2040 version. So we wanted to improve the tracking there so that maybe we could have a follow-up or something within lab to say, hey, this particular cancel or redraw did not get a notification sent out so that we can follow up or call for those, because we want to have 100% notification for these orders.
Our other two opportunities have to do with our workflows in place. And so the first is for our clinician workflows. We have found that clinical users are often dismissing push notifications or leaving them as unread. This isn't just for the examples we've shown. It sometimes happens with our criticals as well. So we have been doing a lot of work to seek and to understand what reasoning is happening, what workflows are going on, how can we work through making sure that we're accepting or seeing what's coming up across our mobile devices. We also have done a lot of follow-up and training with folks who are struggling with that workflow. Our nurse educators have been key in this effort, and so we continue to work through this because we know we're constantly working to better. Training takes time. We have lots of new people coming through, so we're just getting people up to speed. Our other opportunity is with our laboratory workflows. So our add-on workflow is variable across different laboratory spaces based off of acute care and freestanding ED versus our reference lab in Charlotte. What has to happen with add-ons can change in those spaces. So we're trying to seek to understand some of those gaps. With that, our current workflow is built to receive the add-on and then cancel if it's declined. That's what you have to do in the reference lab. We can't send a redraw from where we are off-site from the acute cares, but the acute cares and freestanding EDs can actually use a button in the add-on in basket that says send for new collection, which behaves much more like the redraw function. So provider doesn't have to place a new order, it's just that recollect. So we're starting to notice that we have those gaps and we're wanting to build upon those and create the right workflow so the ambulatory teams are getting the information that they need and able to proceed as needed much more quickly. So as we're working through that optimization and as we're working through this harmonization, we had one last big push as we got ready to combine fully across all of our market spaces for Atrium, and that was our optimization of our specimen type and source. This project took place and went live in August 2023. We worked across it a couple of different months in August 2023 to really get this well. So a little bit of background definitions here. When you're ordering laboratory testing, there's two things that you have to put in for that collection, type and source. Type is defined as the physical type of specimen being collected. It should answer the question, what is the specimen? So think things like urine or tissue or spinal fluid, versus your source should be your anatomical site and source of the specimen, and it should answer from where on the patient is the specimen from. So think your left leg, right arm, colon splenic fissure. It should be far more specific, so your umbrella and what's underneath it. As we were working on harmonizing with our Wake Forest partners, a problem that we ran into is our type and source lists had drifted from those clinical definitions and had become very vague, confusing, and oftentimes redundant. Think types that just said body fluid. Is it sterile? Is it an abscess? Is it an aspirate? We didn't really know. We had redundancies where we had tissue as both a type and a source, and you better believe in microbiology, I definitely got tissues that were tissue. Did not know where it was from on the body. So it made things very difficult on both the lab side and the clinician side. They had a lot of confusion around ordering, and they oftentimes put comments in for clarity, but lab didn't always see those comments. So we were spending a lot of time contacting back care teams to say, what was ordered, what can we get clarified, because we need to make sure that we knew the type and source so we did the right type of testing with the right types of interpretations. So we decided to take this opportunity to refine our type and source list to streamline and refocus on that clinical accuracy.
So we saw the combination between our between what was live for Atrium and our Wake Forest counterparts as the perfect time to undergo this process. So when we were going through our category lists between Wake Forest and Atrium and seeing what we needed to build within the Atrium system, we looked at our specimen types and sources and saw that we had 433 types and almost 1,100 sources. And again, a lot of redundancy, vagueness, stuff that was built for one pathologist who left the organization 8 years ago, sort of stuff like that. And so we assembled an enterprise task force of our chemistry partners, microbiology, molecular cytogenetics, and of course the AP spaces. We also worked with specific pathologists specializing in anatomic areas. For instance, we had a brain and nervous system pathologist consult on this project. And of course, we included our procedural area partners since they're ordering the lion's share of the more complex, some of the more complex testing. So with this group, we defined a set of goals and used them to drive the cleanup. So we wanted to clarify a naming convention to support that accurate specimen data in the chart. Again, we wanted specimen types and sources to answer those two particular questions that Kaylee introduced. We used synonyms to mitigate redundant values. We deactivated any values after doing a slice or dicer data dive. Anything that had fewer than 10 utilizations in the past 2 years, we deactivated. We wanted to get rid of any other or not otherwise specified values in favor of listing out the specific values and making sure that they're on the appropriate orders. We added laterality to everything that needs laterality. That was maybe on about 60% of our sources. And the goal of this, again, is to facilitate ordering. We don't want to have to delay specimen processing, to have lab call the provider to clarify where this is from. So again, this was quite a big project but with very big patient outcomes. So the build process in Epic, after about 2 months of meetings, more than just a couple, with that enterprise group, we arrived at a clear and approved list of specimen types and sources, and then yours truly went through a systematic Epic review of various, I'm not going to go through all of these in detail, but we had to touch container types, our specimen protocols and AP, every procedure that has a specimen type or source, and our navigator configuration that the OR uses to define what types are allowed for which sources and what EAPs are allowed for each type. There's also an Epic utility that they can run to capture what records have these types and sources referenced. So we needed to use those to make sure any types that were or sources that were going away were removed from that functionality. So after quite a bit of Excel and importing and extensive testing in our build and testing environments, we began preparing for go live. Of course, throughout this process, we put together a painstaking change control to make sure that these changes did not go to production early. So in terms of our go live preparation, of course, a large change like this needs training and needs ample advance notice. So what we did first was we brought this to our Encompass Ideas process, which sends out some automatic notifications of changes that are coming into the system. We brought this to several clinical advisory councils. We put together tip sheets upon tip sheets and had some Q&A sessions to ensure that questions were answered. One of the big changes we made in the system prior to go live was we appended an asterisk at the end of any types or sources that were going to be deactivated in August of 2023, and we migrated those to production 2 months early so that people could get used to, oh, body fluid as a type is going away, and there's going to be a new paradigm for how body fluids are ordered. So at our go live, we aligned with a planned downtime to minimize any friction. We coordinated with our Epic TS, since we had to use a replacement utility for any orders that had not yet been released. We wanted to make sure that any orders that had those old types and sources were updated prior to collection so we didn't get any errors. And I think about 32,000 orders were updated, so that was a very important part of that process. And we followed a detailed data migration plan to make sure these changes went in place in the proper order. So why did we take such care for this? I mean, because it could have gone very poorly if we hadn't. As you heard, 32,000 orders. If we hadn't taken that care to replace any types or sources that were deactivated, all of those would have been impossible to collect. They would have thrown an error. But this did go very smoothly. I think we had 10 tickets total for requests to change types and sources on any orderables. So just a couple examples of our tip sheets that we put together. We had that paradigm shift in body fluid ordering where physicians could no longer just select body fluid. We're specifying the appropriate specific fluid being collected. So tip sheets upon tip sheets. We had our type updates and our source updates. I'm happy to share these with anyone who's interested in undergoing this process. And we even put together appendices of here are all the new types we're adding and sources and why, and for all deprecated ones. So you can see, for instance, some of the ones we got rid of were actually types or needed laterality or were too general or had no utilization. Lastly, we put together a maintenance process. Any change requested for type and source needed to go through enterprise clinical review and get approval. We took so much effort to remove vagueness and redundancy, we did not want to create that again. So we're really leveraging synonyms and education over adding to our lists. We defined build steps for deactivations or additions and a change control process so that any analyst who is taking on these changes knows exactly what to do and what order to migrate it to production in.
So why was this important? It made a huge difference. When we look at our starting state to our ending state, we saw an 80% reduction in the amount of types that were available in the system, going from 433 to only 83. And then we saw a 40% reduction in sources, going from that nearly 1,100 to 657. This really allowed providers to focus in on what they needed. And we even reduced sources while adding those more specific ones. We went from, I think, 3 sources to 10, but we got rid of all of those order comments that were having to flow through that may not have always shown well in results for people, for providers going back to review. And again, we added laterality, so we got far more specific and also reduced those lists for clarity, which is fantastic. We saw a huge improvement. So this is a microcosm of what it talks about when we talk about communication that's happening between labs and clinicians. In the Greater Charlotte market, we have a core laboratory reference lab that we've been talking about that uses the customer relationship management or CRM module within Epic to talk with our clinicians. In the 6 months prior to go live, we sent almost 400 CRM communications back to providers asking for clarification, saying, hey, we're not sure what this is, this doesn't align with the order, asking for that. In the 6 months post go live, we sent 167. That's over a 50% reduction in communication. And so remember, that is that microcosm small shot. That does not include our acute cares who call back to nurses and providers. It does not include the freestanding EDs who are doing the same thing. So the volume of communication that we took from a lab and clinician standpoint and were able to reduce due to this clarity was enormous when it comes to time spent on both sides of that relationship. We also had a 30% reduction in cancellations and redraws post-go-live. So like we talked about, the lab, as a lab, we don't want to cancel if we can process specimens appropriately, so we really did leverage our communication instead, but we still saw about a 30% reduction in those cancellations due to things not matching quite right or lining up. So this really helped us quite a bit with our physician relationships and working through when there's a problem, here's the problem, here's how we're going to fix it. We took a lot of confusing orderable systems and were able to then say, okay, you have a body fluid, you want this sort of testing, please tell us what body fluid. No, I'm sorry, we cannot do a cell count on an abscess, but we can do it on pleural fluid. Please tell us which one it is so we can get you what you need so you have the information you need when you need it to do the right interpretation for that post-analytical part of the phases of that specimen life frame. And it really helped with our consultants. We have a lot of specialist consultants in our area that would come back behind 2 or 3 days later and they'd be reviewing results and they would call the lab and say, I don't understand this. This doesn't make sense. And having to help them sort through digging through those reports was frustrating for them and for us. And so this has allowed us a lot more clarity and a lot more clarity in the patient chart too when they continue to move forward in their healthcare journey. So as a summary, when we took this on, we decided to focus in on our pre-analytical gaps because they were causing pain points across our various service lines, and we saw an opportunity to provide better patient safety and care by closing those gaps. We really leaned into the leveraging Epic build and the tools that we had at our disposal to begin closing those gaps and increasing communication. Through our optimization and streamlining, we were able to reduce our pre-analytical errors and improve the patient safety and testing quality. And I would say we've also really improved a lot of our relations with our clinical partners as well, because there's less friction there and we're seeing less kind of back and forth, which has been a big win for everybody, patients, laboratorians, and clinicians alike. This project and these projects and this wave took a lot of work from a lot of different people, so we want to take a minute to acknowledge all of the folks who've made it possible. We have our Beaker lead team, our team leaders, we have our IS executive teams who all spent a lot of time with folks like Ryan and other consultants to really get this work through. Our laboratory operations directors and teammates who were the ones who were bringing these ideas up in meetings and saying, hey, this is what we need. Hey, this is my pain point. And then helping us on the back end to test things and get things into live and production. From our nursing leadership and teams and our nurses who have gone through a lot of learning in a short period of time and have been really excelling at that. And also our Epic IS and TS who spent lots of calls and lots of Sherlock's with us working through this to make sure that we did have a system that was smooth and working really well and really truly optimized in the way that we wanted it to be. So with that, we'd like to open the floor for questions.
Notification for critical values, specifically specifically does this negate phone calls with readback, and is there verification the critical value was received?
So this is this question, I'll just repeat, this was about how did the push notifications for critical values work? I'll just summarize it like that. So I mentioned that Atrium has closed loop criticals, which is a has historically been a niche Epic workflow, but Epic has been investing a lot of resources in making this the new normal. So we have been doing that for about 2.5 years, where we are sending a push notification to nursing and providers for any critical result, and the lab does not need to call if the providers electronically acknowledge it. So they'll get a notification either within hyperspace or on their mobile device, and they can click acknowledge to close that communication loop with the lab. So that does negate the need for a phone call, but the phone call still exists as a backup process. I could probably talk for another 90 minutes about that, because that was a workflow I also worked to implement at Atrium. So actually, one of our counterparts is presenting right now at XGM in Madison, presenting to 3 different advisory councils about our success story with closed loop criticals. Please ask me, reach out to me if you have more questions about it. Modena.
Another question. Did the changes to source and type impact any container sharing, particularly in the laboratory or within the laboratory?
So did our type and source changes affect container sharing? No, they did not, because we updated our container master file very carefully. The only thing that container sharing predominantly looks at type, unless you have some special rules on your OVTs, which we accounted for with our build. So we had no container sharing issues.
Yes, ma'am.
Just to go back to the original question about critical values, and that's your favorite topic. Does Epic capture the timing? So the result came out at this time, it was acknowledged at this time.
So the question is, does Epic, for the critical value notifications, does Epic capture all of the timing? You betcha it does. Yes, it captures the notifications go out at final verification. Of course, we're getting that timestamp. We have the timestamp of our acknowledgments. We built all sorts of reports for turnaround time with those. So yes. In the back. Yeah, good question. So we did refer to those lists. The question was, when we were looking at our specimen type and source lists, did we look at using an industry standard list like from SNOMED or another industry standard? We did refer to those lists. We were harmonizing across multiple hospitals, and our clinician team opted to create their own. We did consider that, but happy to talk more about that after. Yes.
So the question is, a team is moving from SunQuest to Epic, and we mentioned customer relation management. Is that something in Epic? Yes. It's a huge module within Epic, and it has been, dare I say, life-changing when it comes to our client service relation management. It is incredibly useful. The way we have it set up, since we're so large, especially within our reference lab, is we have departments who then can reach out to our client services team. They take those CRM cases, and they can reach out to providers. They can do that through Epic, since most of our providers are within Epic. They can do it in inbox messaging. For providers who might fall outside of our Epic system, they'll call them. But all of that detail is recorded in that client relations management case. So if we ever have to refer back to it, we have all of it. We have the person who initiated it, who was contacted, when they were contacted, what they were contacted about. And it makes a really big difference, because now we're not having to dig through emails or dig through voicemails and try to connect the dots back together. So yes, it's a module in Epic, and it is well worth the time to get it set up, because it does make a huge amount of difference in kind of time and communication. Any other questions?
So again, thank you all for attending. We are happy to talk, provide more details about any of these projects. I'm happy to advise any of these. If you have more questions or send additional screenshots so that you can build them within your system. Also, if there's interest in the closed loop criticals process, we presented on that last year, and I'd be happy to share our presentation from last year as well. Thank you all.
Great job. Great job. Yes, thank you very much.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.